You know, one of the things Scott Carney says in his book is the reason that these incredible markets exist is that there's no artificial thing, no scientific or mechanical intervention will ever be as good as the body part that it needs to replace. And we're going to be spending a little bit of the remainder of the show, parts of the remainder of the show, kind of exploring that question and whether there's sort of a ground in between those two choices. With us right now is Dr. Cato Lorenzen. He's Van Dusen's Distinguished Endowed Professor of Orthopedic Surgery at the University of Connecticut Health Center and Director of the Institute for Regenerative Engineering at the at UConn. Dr. Lorenzen, welcome to the show. And you've been sitting here listening to this upsetting stuff from Scott Carney, but maybe you could just begin. What does regenerative engineering even mean? What does the term mean?
Well, first of all, I'm a little bit lightheaded after the conversation.
You were supposed to help me with that. You're the doctor.
But I'm okay now. Okay. So regenerative engineering is really, we believe, the next generation of work being done in regeneration of tissues. About 25 years ago, the area called tissue engineering was born, which is as a way to regenerate tissues. And we believe that now with some of the new changes in science, such as nanotechnology, some of the new changes in terms of stem cell sciences, and also morphogenesis, what happens to primordial tissues, that we've coined the term regenerative engineering to describe our work, where we're able to combine all these new areas to be able to regenerate complex tissues.
And, you know, actually, I grew up reading lurid comic books, so I know that this idea has been around for a long time. Somebody's got an amputation or something like that, and there's a mad scientist waiting there who thinks he can do that, and it winds up turning them into a lizard, and they fight Spider-Man. But this is an idea that's now not a mad scientist idea. This is the actual idea that you might be able to regenerate, I assume, parts of a missing limb. That's really what we're talking about here, right?
Sure, that's what we're involved in. And we started the work by looking at regeneration of different types of tissues. And so we worked on regeneration of bone. And about 20 years ago, people didn't think we could regenerate bone, but we've been able to do that. It's soft tissue we've regenerated, and a lot of our work has involved the ACL, the anterior cruciate ligament, that's injured. I'm a shoulder surgeon and sports medicine doc, and it's a common injury in terms of athletes. And we've just completed work to demonstrate that we can regenerate the ACL inside the body using our engineered devices to be able to make that occur. And so we're very excited about that work that's going to begin human trials later this year in Europe to develop that area. We've worked in skin, worked in cartilage, and now with pretty much all the different types of tissues of the extremity, we're now exploring how do we make the combinations occur to be able to regenerate larger areas of tissue.
When we see larger areas of tissue, are we talking about, I mean, there are people, of course, born without fully developed limbs, and there are people who lose their limbs in war and in other ways. So is that the dream? Is that the dream that you're working towards, that one of those kinds of people, those two categories of people, gets a missing lower extremity or something?
Right. That's the overall goal. And so we've started by combining different types of tissue types, and we've done some work just in animals right now where we can combine these different types of tissue types to be able to create things that look like functional limbs for the extremity for different animals. And now we're trying to explore how to be able to move and scale that up to be able to regenerate larger areas of tissues. And it's interesting. It's really going to take what I call a regeneration toolbox to make that occur. We've got some new tools in terms of nanotechnology. We understand stem cells and stem cell science. Our body has a great capacity to heal itself, especially with the stem cells that we have in our own body. And we also have some capacities to heal ourselves in terms of just like smaller animals like salamanders and newts can do. We've got a little bit of newt in us in many ways in terms of our ability to be able to help ourselves regenerate. And harnessing those capabilities is what regenerative engineering is about.
Actually, I've got a lot of newt in me. So would this be I'm just trying to even picture how this would go. And maybe we're not at that point where you can even picture how this would go. But let's imagine that I'm a serviceman who's lost the lower part of his leg. And would I be encased in something for a long period of time? Or how do you picture something happening or would you regrow it separately and then attach it to me? I don't even know that.
Well, there are a lot of different paradigms for this to occur. And I think, first of all, it would probably start with the use of some of your own cells, harvesting some of your own cells, isolating stem cells of your own, and then utilizing matrices or synthetic materials that we've developed in the laboratory for bone, ligament, cartilage, all the different areas to be able to do that, place these stem cells in the area to regenerate them. And then we're learning about new molecules. Kevin Lowe, who works in our group at UConn, has worked on a new small molecule that is found primordially that actually helps to regenerate bone. We'll utilize some of our new cues that we're learning to be able to help regenerate it at the appropriate time and plant that at the location.
Wow. Our number is 860-275-7266. If you have comments or questions, 860-275-7266. Our guest right now is Dr. Cato Lorenzen. He's a professor of orthopedic surgery at University of Connecticut Health Center and runs the Institute for Regenerative Engineering at UConn. What's the horizon for this? I mean, when do you think these things are going to happen?
Well, first of all, it's always longer than you think.
Yeah.
And so, we started work on bone about 20 years ago, and now there's actually a bone, engineered bone is actually something that everyone can have. It's actually commercially on the market. In the area of a ligament, we started about 15 years ago, and now we're in human trials. So we're moving forward. It's step by step, but I'm hoping in the next 5 to 10 years that we'll have some prototypes that we'll be able to move forward with.
So in the lifetimes of many of the people listening to the show, you would expect that you'll actually see patients for whom regenerated tissue that didn't exist, and an actual part of the body, like the lower leg or something like that, will be can be added back to them or given to them.
Yeah, I feel fairly good about that. I think there's a great possibility. And also, again, I think that also needs will drive this to a certain extent. There are 77, for instance, there are 77 million baby boomers in the country, and they have body parts and tissues that will be undergoing significant wear over the years and will be searching for answers to be able to make for these different areas of the body that need to be regenerated. And I think there's going to be a tremendous need that will be increasing over time, and I think that that we'll be able to get the answers to make this occur.
All right. I am a baby boomer. I've got a partially torn left rotator cuff, end-stage arthritis in my right knee, and arthritis in my left. So I'm very excited about your work, but you shouldn't even be on this radio show. You should be back in your lab.
I'm on my way back right now.
Dr. Cato Lorenzen is here with us right now. Scott Carney, you're listening to all this. Obviously, a lot of it would, some of it anyway, might sort of change the equation a little bit about some of the stuff that you've written about. Do you have either questions or your own comments about scenarios like the one that Dr. Lorenzen's laying out for us?
Well, one thing I'd like to say is that Dr. Lorenzen's obviously a hero of medicine, and I think that he's doing excellent work. And I think regenerative medicine is very promising. But I do want to put a note of caution out there as your listeners listen to what he's saying, is that he said 5 to 10 years we'll have some of these tissues available, and I hope that's true. But we've been hearing a promise like that since the mid-60s when the first artificial kidneys came out. Now, while the hard tissues such as ligaments and bones, which are obviously much easier to produce, are obviously going to be easier. But the living tissues, I read another story in the newspapers just about every day saying any second we're going to print out new living organs and then the kidney problem is going to be released. And I think this is a very dangerous thought because we don't have them in our hands, but we want them. And in my book, I write that regenerative medicine, while excellent, is actually driving up the market for organs because we want them now. And our surgical techniques have really advanced very well. It's very easy to do a kidney transplant. And we're already treating human organs like they're synthetic, and we're purchasing them like they're synthetic. And this is dangerous, I think.
Dr. Lorenzen, what about what he says, the whole idea that this idea has been around for a long time? People have been expecting it. I wasn't expecting it since the 1960s. This is the first I ever thought it might be a reality. But is this something, is it a timeline that's been pushed back and back and back?
Well, I think that the concept of regeneration of a limb is something that is fairly new. I think that I remember, back in the 1900s, when we first talked about regeneration of bone, people said, listen, we just learned how to grow bone cells rather than regenerate it. And so, and it's been a while, but we've been able to accomplish that over the years. When I first talked about the regeneration of the ACL and being able to start human trials at some point, many people thought that that was not going to be possible, and that being able to demonstrate it or even get approval to start clinical trials, human trials, would be impossible. But we're on the verge of starting that, and we'll be starting that later this year. So I think that those are I'm a bit more sanguine about the possibilities. As I prefaced, it always takes longer than you think. And everything has to be step by step. But we've made the steps to be able to make that happen. Now, it's a little bit different in terms of when we talk about kidney regeneration and liver regeneration and some of these other areas. I think that those time frames and those horizons are a lot longer. But I think that we've been able to demonstrate some of the things that we've talked about in bone and ligament and other musculoskeletal tissues in quite a unique way, and we'll be continuing to make those change, make that progress over time.
The other thing to remember about Scott is he wrecks everything, because he's actually got explain the article you've got coming out now, Scott.
I have an article and details that came out today. You should go online right now, details.com, on meditation-induced psychosis. People who meditate, which I love meditation. I love yoga. But the people who do this and then sort of go off the deep end. So there goes your hatha yoga.
Well, I was going to say, my doctor actually was just saying to me that I should start meditating more to get my blood pressure down and stuff like that. And I'm already perched on the edge of psychosis. So you now put me in a very difficult position. I hope you're happy.
Do it. You'll be fine.
Just meditate. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm reading the article first. So Dr. Lorenzen's with us right now. You know, we're talking about replacement parts today, and the stuff that Dr. Lorenzen's talking about is going to be for people who've lost limbs in war or born without limbs. I think at some point is going to be just this incredible moment. But we're also living right in this moment. And joining us right now is Dr. John Grady Benson. He's orthopedic surgeon at Connecticut Joint Replacement Institute at St. Francis. First of all, welcome to the show. And we wanted you to talk a little bit about sort of what the state of the art is now for joint replacement. First of all, how recent is joint replacement? I'm trying to remember. I mean, I'm 57 years old. I'm trying to remember if for all of my life you could get a knee or hip replacement. I'm kind of thinking you probably couldn't.
Yes, for modern joint replacement, it really started in the United Kingdom in the late 1960s, came to the United States after a guy named Sir John Charnley introduced the concept of hip replacement surgery. Prior to that, for decades, people tried all sorts of crazy things, trying to interpose tissue, glass, ceramics, between the ball and socket joint of the hip. But modern joint replacement really only been around in our lifetime since the late 1960s.
Now, before the show started, I asked Dr. Lorenzen whether I should get a knee replacement soon or wait for him to develop some amazing thing that's a million times better than what exists now. Maybe you can also sort of answer that question. I think a lot of people look at joint replacement and it's everywhere now, and it's advertised, and it's just this gigantic industry. On the other hand, there's something a little scary to people like me about the idea you're going to go in there and sort of change out the knee that I've got. How do you want patients to think about this?
Well, first of all, I think some statistics would be important to review. Arthritis is the leading cause of disability in the United States alone. It's the number one reason for people to go see their doctor. More than 21% of Americans have disabling arthritis. And you talked about being a baby boomer and the 77 million people, which is now going to be 25% of the population. It's estimated that about 25% of people over 65 will, in the next 8 years, require or need their joint replaced. So it is extremely common. And it comes down to the basic biologic fact in 2012 that cartilage, once it's damaged, has a poor capacity to heal, which makes Dr. Lorenzen's work so vitally important, is if we can figure out a way to prevent cartilage from being damaged or to allow cartilage to heal, then we'll have an answer. But that being as it is now, since when cartilage is gone, it's gone. If people have disabling pain that is significantly interfering with their life, and physical signs of stiffness, loss of mobility, x-ray evidence of significant arthritis, then, fortunately, joint replacement can be a positive, life-altering experience that can allow them to return to the mobility and activities that they once enjoyed. So in 2010, there were literally about 445,000 hip replacements in the United States and 600,000 knee replacements. And the demographics of it, given the aging of the population and the baby boomers, are absolutely on a steep upward curve.
You know, I want to go back over to Dr. Lorenzen for a second about this because, you know, one of the things that we talked about exclusively really was the idea of kind of basically replacing something that wasn't there, like a limb or something like that at some point. But Dr. Greedy Benson is sort of suggesting, if I understand him correctly, one thing that your technology, the area that you're working in, might be able to do is before my cartilage is so far gone that I need a knee replacement, somebody might be able to go in there and give me cartilage that I'm losing?
Yeah, there are a lot of different approaches that can be used. One is to look at ways to rejuvenate the cartilage that you have. There's some conventional things that we do right now as orthopedic surgeons in terms of such as hyaluronic acid and other injections. But there's some other new technologies involving chitosan and other materials that may be able to rejuvenate the materials of the cartilage that's present. There's also the possibility of doing some cartilage preservation techniques very early on when there's early signs of arthritis, and we've explored different modalities to be able to make that occur. And then finally, the holy grail is regenerating cartilage, and as was previously said, cartilage is one of these tissues that's very, very difficult to regenerate. But there are some new techniques using nanofiber technology, et cetera, to be able to regenerate cartilage that holds some promise. And again, it's a ways off, but it's exciting. There's exciting possibilities. And, you know, there's an article today in JAMA that talks about the numbers of total joint arthroplasties. There are 600,000 being done every year in the U.S., and this was alluded to earlier. The numbers are going to be increasing so much, and so there's such a great need, and I believe there's going to be a great emphasis on the work to be able to bring these answers.
Our number 860-275-7266. One thing we've figured out is if this whole medicine thing doesn't work out for you, we could get you work as a voice talent. You got a great voice. I could get you a Honda commercial this afternoon or something. You got the voice for that kind of work.
Well, thank you.
All right. You don't look interested, though. Let's grab a call or two here. We'll start out with Margaret in Walcott. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I'm just curious about this. My husband, Al, is supposed to be having knee replacement surgery by Dr. Grady Benson in December, and I would love to see another method of something not so as extreme, but I guess maybe his situation is just too deteriorated. But the Dr. Lorenzen made me sound, wow, could he have regenerative tissue done?
Well, no, it's kind of, we're not really ready for that yet, right?
Well, you know, well, first of all, I think that you're in great hands with Dr. Grady Benson. He's known in the orthopedic surgery community very, and he's thought of very highly. So you're in great hands. Again, I think that the other point is that the reason why there's 600,000 total joint arthroplasties being performed is it's a great operation in terms of the outcomes, and patients do extremely well and are able to have really high quality of life, and so. We've got a great procedure that's out there in terms of helping people, but the future does hold, I think, some promise in terms of these different techniques. It's going to be ways longer than we would think and hope, but they'll be there. But right now, I think we have a great surgical procedure with great outcomes with great doctors. So it's the way to go.
Dr. Grady Benson, maybe you can quickly say, do the materials that you're using change much every 3 or 4 years, or do we get more space age in the materials being used for joint replacement?
Well, it's interesting. For the vast majority of people, 95% of the implants will last 15 years for most people with a reasonable activity level. So present implant-bearing materials have done exceptionally well, and there are appropriate restrictions for new technologies because some new technologies that have been introduced in the past have not done well with higher-than-expected early failure rates. So we're satisfied with how implants are doing now, and technology will move slowly because to really truly determine if an implant's going to be better than the 15 to 30 year follow-up, it's going to take that long to kind of figure that out. So implant materials testing is a highly sophisticated science. The difference between testing things in the lab and testing them in the human animal is that humans can have a biologic response to some of the wear debris that can occur between the moving parts. So unfortunately, those things move slowly. You know, people want to grab onto the newest technology, but the newest technology may not be, for prosthetic bearing materials, that is, may not be the best thing to do.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. That's Dr. Grady Benson from St. Francis Hospital. We're going to talk a little bit more about the future of tissue generation in our final segment.
I'm looking forward to the day when we can have a wardrobe of knees and hips to suit our mood and our fashion choices. I think I'll wear my Kate Spade knee with my Randy Jackson hip today. Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan, Patrick Scahill, and me, with help from Mr. Woodford and Matthew Robert. The part of Bill Curry was played by Vincent Price. On tomorrow's show, we're downtown at 90 State House Square in Hartford for a conversation about Connecticut history. Come visit us. And now, back to Colin.
So, we're going to be downtown tomorrow and Friday, and so do come visit us. We want to have a live audience. Tomorrow's conversation is going to focus a lot on Connecticut history, particularly the historical notion of Connecticut as a land of steady habits. But we'd love to have you down there. I will be wearing my Randy Jackson frames, but I'm not wearing them today. All right. So we're talking today about replacement parts and replacement parts for the human body. We've talked about sort of some of the ugly realities of the present, but also some of the really exciting ideas about the future. We're going to go back to the future again with Dr. Laura Nicholson. She's a professor at the Department of Anesthesiology and Department of Biomedical Engineering at Yale University. And she's with us now. It turns out Dr. Lorenzen knew right away who we were talking about, because I guess the things that you're doing are not too far apart. But Dr. Nicholson, explain just in a nutshell where your research is headed.
Well, my lab at Yale is really working on regenerating two different types of tissues. One is blood vessels that can be used for bypass operations one day, say for bypassing arteries in the leg or eventually for heart bypass. A second type of tissue that we've been working on regenerating is actually whole lung tissue. We're developing techniques to culture segments of lung in the lab that can function when implanted in animals and exchange gas.
The lung part of it is seems to me like I don't even know how to put it, but sort of an Everest kind of a, when you think of all the things that can be replaced or can't be replaced, and I mean lung tissue seems as though it would really open up a whole new world of medical treatments. So how far along are you with that?
Well, you know, to give you a sense, we've been probably working on this problem for 5 or 6 years. We've shown some short-term success in small animals. We've cultured lungs that can exchange gas for a few hours. I still think we're probably a couple decades away from something that can function for long-term in a large animal or a human. But one of the, you're right, I mean, lung is sort of a Mount Everest in that it's such a complicated tissue. But one of the advantages of the lung is that it's actually a tissue that's made up of a bunch of single layers of cells, very thin cell layers. And for tissue engineers, that's actually one of the things that makes it more tractable.
You know, I'm just interested to have the two of you in here, and you're working in more or less the same world, although in different parts of the body. Dr. Lorenzen, to you, how different is what she does from what you do? Is this all the same science, or does it seem like radically different medical science?
Well, it's both, because on one hand we have certain principles that we utilize in terms of utilizing materials and matrices, cells, biological factors. We also look at how the body can heal itself. So it's there are certain principles that are in common, but at the same time there are some radically different areas in terms of the body that we're talking about, in terms of the special constraints that they have. For instance, in bone, we're looking at the mechanical strength and also its ability to be able to have calcium and phosphate homeostasis lung in terms of oxygen exchange and it, you know, so there are differences that are there. But I think that the work that she's doing is exciting, and look forward to seeing the progress.
You know, Dr. Nicholson, one of the things that Scott was saying before is people like hear about this and then they want it right away, and if they can't get that right away, they may opt for something else that's maybe less ethical or less desirable. But, you know, how much pressure do you feel that way? Do you feel as though people know about what you're doing and expect that it's right on the horizon?
Well, I think there's a little bit of that. I mean, we certainly get, I'm sure like Dr. Lorenzen as well, you know, we certainly get emails pretty frequently from patients who either need replacement blood vessels or in some cases have bad lung disease. And those emails are always, you know, pretty heartbreaking because clearly these are folks who've kind of run out of options. I guess I would say I feel pressure from the standpoint that, you know, obviously these patients are out there that have genuine needs. But I don't feel pressure from the standpoint of, people are expecting this tomorrow. I think that by and large people, you know, understand that these are long-term problems. You know, with the blood vessel work, we have made enough progress that we're going to be in patients actually pretty shortly. So that's very exciting. But I think by and large, people understand that this stuff takes time.
You know, we get great calls, and I also have a whole bunch of questions that I don't know what to do because there's so little time left. But just quick question, Dr. Nicholson, with the blood vessels, when you say you're going to be inpatient now, are those going to be blood vessels that you grow out? Do you have to grow them out of the tissue and stem cells and stuff from the patient, or does it not work that way?
Yeah, for the blood vessels, we've developed a strategy to use a cell bank, actually, human cells, but not from the patient. And we grow these tissues in a lab, and then we give them a treatment so that we wash away, actually, a lot of the cells and the immunogenicity. So then these blood vessels actually can be implanted into any other patient without taking cells from the patient. In fact, we can implant these tissues sort of off the shelf. The surgeon can literally pull them off the shelf and implant them into the patient.
Between that and Dr. Lorenzen talking about there are companies that make bone now. The world we're living in is pretty amazing. Liz, do you have a real quick question that somebody can answer?
Well, yes, I do. It was about my daughter gets the cytokine therapy for osteoarthritis, Regenokine. Nobody knew about that, and we have health care and everything, and it won't pay for that therapy. So out of pocket, we've paid over $10,000 and it's working, and hopefully there'll be an ankle joint to be replaced in the future. But you know, are these great innovations going to be affordable through the common man who has the health care and wants the insurance to pay for it?
It's a great question. It's about a one-hour show probably, but I don't know whether Dr. Lorenzen, what about that? It's going to cost a lot of money, right?
It's going to cost a lot, and it's an excellent question. One thing to remember is what our costs are right now. Right now, $600,000. Total knee replacements. Some people think it may go up to 3 million total knee replacements in the next 20 years per year. That's a huge cost to the economy. And so alternatives that actually may, with new technology, may actually decrease our cost. And the cost analysis is going to be very important in terms of bringing these to the market.
All right. I promise to get my knee replacement before I go on Medicare so it doesn't make Medicare cost more. I probably need two of them, actually. Everybody, what a great show. What an amazing show. Thanks so much to our incredible producer, Betsy Kaplan. I do have to go lie down, I think. But this is amazing stuff. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be in downtown Hartford. Feel free to come by, be part of the audience.
Everybody has a body, and everybody has body parts. Body parts. Body parts. Body parts.
I'm Kyone Wolf, and I've had a vocal cord replacement. Colin McEnroe was the donor.
I'm Colin McEnroe. Kyone, you're getting a raise.
Yes!
Just kidding. This is public radio.